Welcome to New World Newts, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, Chris Hedges marks the start of the Trump era with a rousing speech calling for resistance. Plus, an essay by Bernie Sanders. Workers arise, and please stay tuned. January 21, 2017, the day after Inauguration Day, a small but vocal minority of people launched a movement called Occupy Inauguration. Their rally in D.C. was titled Inaugurate the Resistance, and Chris Hedges, Jill Stein, and others spoke. Today, we'll hear Chris Hedges' address. Then I'll read a brief essay that says some very similar things, an essay published by Bernie Sanders back in March 2016. That was just before the Democratic Party anointed Hillary Rodham Clinton as the next president of the United States. Or so they thought. Or so they pretended to think. But back to Chris Hedges. On January 21, he was in fine form and sounding much like himself. Here he is.
The ruling elites, terrified by the mobilization of the left in the 1960s, or by what Samuel Huntington called America's excess of democracy, built counter-institutions to delegitimize and marginalize critics of corporate capitalism and imperialism. They bought the allegiances of the two main political parties. They imposed ideological obedience to the neoliberal agenda within academia and the press. This campaign, laid out by Lewis Powell in his 1971 memorandum, Attack on American Free Enterprise System, was the blueprint for the creeping corporate coup d'etat that 45 years later is complete. The destruction of democratic institutions, places where the citizen has agency and a voice, is far graver than the ascendancy to the White House of the demagogue Donald Trump. The coup destroyed our two-party system. It destroyed labor unions. It destroyed public education. It destroyed the judiciary. It destroyed the press. It destroyed academia. It destroyed consumer and environmental protection. It destroyed our industrial base. It destroyed communities and cities. And it has destroyed the lives of tens of millions of Americans, no longer able to find work that provides a living wage, cursed to live in chronic poverty, or locked in cages in our monstrous system of mass incarceration. This coup has also destroyed the credibility of liberal democracy. Self-identified liberals such as the Clintons or Barack Obama mouthed the words of liberal democratic values while making war on those values in the service of corporate power. The revolt we see rippling across the country is a revolt not only against a corporate system that has betrayed workers, but also for many, liberal democracy itself. This is very dangerous. It will allow the radical right under a Trump administration to rapidly cement into place an Americanized fascism. Ignorance allied with power, James Baldwin wrote, is the most ferocious enemy justice can have. It turns out 45 years later that those who truly hate us for our freedoms are not the array of dehumanized enemies cooked up by the war machine, the Vietnamese, Cambodians, Afghans, Iraqis, Iranians, or even the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. They are the financiers, bankers, politicians, public intellectuals and pundits, lawyers, journalists, and business people, cultivated in the elite universities and business schools, who sold us the utopian dream of neoliberalism. We are entering the twilight phase of capitalism. Wealth is no longer created by producing or manufacturing. It is created by manipulating the prices of stocks and commodities and imposing a crippling debt peonage on the public. Our casino capitalism has merged with the gambling industry. The entire system is parasitic. It is designed to prey on the desperate, students burdened by loans, underpaid workers burdened by credit card debt and mortgages, towns and cities forced to borrow to maintain municipal services. Casino magnates such as Sheldon Adelson and hedge fund managers such as Robert Mercer add nothing of value to society. They do not generate money, but redistribute it upwards to the 1%. They use lobbyists and campaign contributions to build monopolies. This is how the drug company Mylan raised the price of the EpiPen used to treat allergy reactions from $57 in 2007 to $500. To rewrite the laws and regulations, they have given themselves the legal power to carry out a tax boycott, loot the U.S. Treasury, close factories, send jobs overseas, gut social service programs, and impose austerity. They have at the same time militarized our police, built the most sophisticated security and surveillance apparatus in human history, and taken from us our civil liberties by judicial fiat. They are ready, should we rise up in defiance. These mandarins are, if we speak in the language of God and country, traitors. They are parasites. Financial speculation in 17th century England was a crime. Speculators were hanged. The heads of most of the banks and hedge funds, the executives of large corporations such as Walmart and Gap, that run sweatshop death traps for impoverished workers overseas, deserve prison far more than most of the poor students of color who never had a fair chance in life and who I teach within our prison system. When a tiny cabal seizes power, monarchist, communist, fascist, or corporate, it creates a mafia economy and a mafia state. Donald Trump is not an anomaly. He is the grotesque visage of a collapsed democracy. Trump and his coterie of billionaires, generals, half-wits, Christian fascists, criminals, racists, and deviants play the role of William Faulkner's Snopes clan. The Snopeses, in Faulkner's novels, ruthlessly seized control from the degenerated former slave-holding aristocratic elites. Flem Snopes and his extended family, which included a killer, a pedophile, a bigamist, an arsonist, a mentally disabled man who copulates with a cow, and a relative who sells tickets to witness the bestiality, are fictional representations of the scum now elevated to the highest level of the federal government. They embody the moral rot unleashed by decay and unfettered capitalism. The usual reference to amorality, while accurate, is not sufficiently distinctive and by itself does not allow us to place them as they should be placed in a historical moment, the critic Irving Howe wrote of the Snopeses. Perhaps the most important thing to be said is that they are what comes afterwards, the creatures that emerge from the devastation with the slime still upon their lips. Let a world collapse in the South or Russia, and there appear figures of coarse ambition, driving their way up from beneath the social bottom, men to whom moral claims are not so much as absurd as incomprehensible. Sons of bushwhackers and musics drifting in from nowhere and taking over through the sheer outrageousness of their monolithic force. They become presidents of local banks and chairmen of party regional committees, and later, a trifle slicked up, they muscle their way into Congress or the Politburo. Scavengers without inhibition. They need not believe in the crumbling official code of their society. They need only learn to mimic its sounds. What comes next, history has shown, will not be pleasant. A corrupt and inept ruling elite, backed by the organs of state security and law enforcement, will unleash a naked kleptocracy. Workers will become serfs. The most benign dissent will be criminalized. The ravaging of the ecosystem will propel us towards extinction. Hate talk will call for attacks against Muslims, undocumented workers, African Americans, feminists, intellectuals, artists, dissidents, who will be scapegoated for the country's stagnation. Magical thinking will dominate our airwaves and be taught in our public schools. Art and culture will be degraded to nationalist quiche. All the cultural and intellectual disciplines that allow us to view the world from the perspective of the other, that foster empathy, understanding, and compassion, will be replaced by a grotesque and cruel hyper-masculinity and hyper-militarism. Racism, bigotry, misogyny, and homophobia will be validated by those in power. Our only hope now is an unwavering non-cooperation with the systems of corporate control. We must rebuild new democratic institutions from the ground up. We must not be seduced into trusting the power elites, including the Democratic Party, with 7 leading candidates to be the next chair of the Democratic National Committee demonstrated the other night at George Washington University that they have no interest in defying corporate power or backing democratic populism. And we must also acknowledge our own failures on the left, our elitism, arrogance, and refusal to root our politics in local communities. Rosa Luxemburg understood that unless we first address the most pressing economic and physical needs of the destitute, we will never gain credibility or build a resistance movement. Revolt, she said, is achieved only by establishing genuine relationships with the oppressed, including with people who do not think like us. Successful revolt surges up from below. Politics is a game of fear. Those who do not make power elites afraid do not succeed. All the movements that opened up the democratic space in America, the abolitionists, suffragists, communists, socialists, anarchists, and the labor and civil rights movements, developed a critical mass and militancy that forced the centers of power to respond. Platitudes about justice, equality, and democracy are just that. Only when power is threatened does it react. Appealing to its better nature is useless. It doesn't have one. We once had within our capitalist democracy liberal institutions, the press, labor unions, third parties, civic and church groups, public broadcasting, well-funded public universities, and a liberal wing of the Democratic Party that were capable of responding to outside pressure from movements. They did so imperfectly. They provided only enough reforms to save the capitalist system from widespread unrest or with the breakdown of capitalism in the 1930s from revolution. They never addressed white supremacy and institutional racism or the cruelty that is endemic to capitalism. But they had the ability to ameliorate the suffering of working men and women. This safety valve no longer works, and when reform becomes impossible, revolution becomes inevitable. The days ahead, days ahead will be dark and frightening. But as Immanuel Kant reminded us, if justice perishes, human life on earth has lost its meaning. We fight for the sacred. We fight for life. It is a fight we must not lose. To be a bystander is to be complicit in radical evil.
Tell it.
Revolt is a political necessity. It is a moral imperative. It is a defense of the sacred, and it alone makes hope possible. The moment we defy power, we are victorious. The moment we stand alongside the oppressed and accept being treated like the oppressed, we are victorious. The moment we hold up a flickering light in the darkness for others to see, we are victorious. The moment we thwart the building of a pipeline or a fracking site, we are victorious. And the moment those in power become frightened of us, we are victorious. I do not know if we can build a better society. I do not even know if we will survive as a species. But I know these corporate forces have us by the throat, and they have my children by the throat. I do not fight fascists because I will win. I fight fascists because they are fascists. Thank you.
You got a penthouse in the city and another home in the hills. You got a condo office on the 51st floor and you walk on a carpet made of $100 bills. Well, I look at you up there in your plush office chair and I wonder what is going through your brain. As you look outside your window, watch the people moving by below. You must be thinking about your capital. And tell me exactly what it is you do. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that you make your money from the goofy work that other people do. Well, that's living away in fields and factories. You're sipping your coffee on Madison Avenue. Should I call you evil? Should I call you cruel? Did you just come from the right family? Sometimes blame is just like honey, gets all over everything. And it's never enough to be careful what you find when you're shopping. In a land known for democracy, it's amazing how it comes to be. Freedom is the choice between Coke and Pepsi. So tell me your free markets will satisfy our needs. Don't tell me that what's good for Monsanto is good for me. You rob us of our livelihoods and our grandmother's seeds. Your endless thirst for profit is a social disease. Should I call you evil? Should I call you cruel? Did you just come from the right family and go to all the right schools?
That's Ethan Miller and Kate Boberman with Song for the Unnamed Capitalist. Many thanks to Chaz K. for sending that one my way. Before that, Chris Hedges helping to inaugurate the resistance. Many thanks to that public-spirited video and audio producer, Wilton Vaught, who made and shared that recording. Find more of Wilton's work at his website, Other Voices, Other Choices, .com. That's Other Voices, Other Choices, .com. Progressive political scientist Michael Parenti pegged Bernie Sanders well, I think. Never mind Sanders' claims about being a socialist. He's not. He is a liberal Democrat. Probably the only liberal Democrat in the Senate. For decades, the senators have been a bad lot. But I do think that Sanders is the best of the lot. That's not high praise, but it is praise. On June 25th, 2016, my daily newspaper carried an op-ed essay with Sanders' byline. Sanders' essay is similar in a lot of ways to Hedges' talk. Politically, Hedges is to the left of Sanders, for sure. But they're more or less in the same ballpark here. I will read most of Sanders' piece. It is titled, Here's What We Want. And here's what he says. As we head towards the Democratic National Convention, I often hear the question, what does Bernie want? Wrong question. The right question is, what do 12 million Americans who voted for a political revolution want? And the answer is, they want real change in this country, and they want it now, and they are prepared to take on the political cowardice and powerful special interests that have prevented that change from happening. They understand that the United States is the richest country in the history of the world, and that new technology and innovation make us wealthier every day. What they don't understand is why the middle class continues to decline. 47 million of us live in poverty, and many Americans are forced to work two or three jobs just to cobble together the income they need to survive. What do we want? We want an economy that is not based on uncontrollable greed, monopolistic practices, and illegal behavior. We want an economy that protects the human needs and dignity of all people. We want an economic and political system that works for all of us, not one in which almost all new wealth and power rests with a handful of billionaire families. The current campaign finance system is corrupt. Billionaires and powerful corporations are now, through super PACs, able to spend as much money as they want to buy elections and elect candidates who represent their interests, not the American people. Our criminal justice system is broken. We have 2.2 million people rotting behind bars at an annual expense of $80 billion. What do we want? We want a criminal justice system that addresses the causes of incarceration, not one that simply imprisons more people. We want to demilitarize local police departments. See, local police departments reflect the diversity of the communities they serve and end private ownership of prisons and detention centers. We want the best educated population on earth, not the most incarcerated population. The debate is over. Climate change is real. It is caused by human activity, and it already is causing devastating damage in our country and to the entire planet. If present trends continue, scientists tell us the planet will be 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer by the end of the century, which means more droughts, floods, extreme weather disturbances, rising sea levels, and acidification of the oceans. This is a planetary crisis of extraordinary magnitude. What do we want? We want the United States to lead the world in pushing our energy system away from fossil fuel and towards energy efficiency and sustainable energy. We want a tax on carbon, the end of fracking, and massive investment in wind, solar, geothermal, and other sustainable technologies. We want to leave this planet in a way that is healthy and habitable for future generations. What do we want? We want to end the rapid movement that we are currently experiencing towards oligarchic control of our economic and political life. As Lincoln put it at Gettysburg, we want a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That is what we want. And that is what we will continue fighting for. That's Bernie Sanders, sounding like a good liberal Democrat, which is more than Hillary Rodham Clinton ever did. Obama, on the other hand, was very good, at least at sounding like a liberal when he wanted to. Sanders' essay, which I have condensed a little, is titled, Here's What We Want. Alas, he skipped over a few things that I want, like throttling back corporate capitalism, and shutting down the whole military-industrial complex, and restoring our civil liberties. A bit of an oversight there. Oh well. That wraps it up for this week's New World Notes. Find us at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non-carborundum, and reminding you that you are not alone. Y'all come back now, here.